Hey, good morning. We have a really special guest today, John Slattery of Tucson, who just published his book, Southwest Foraging, 117 Wild and Flavorful Edibles from Barrel Cactus to Wild Oregano. You know, every year we talk about how Rosie and I love to go out and pick prickly pear and process it and all the different things we've made from it. And often we make gifts for it for Christmas. And it's really kind of turned into this family tradition. And as I was reading my current edible Baja, on the very first couple pages, there was this new book by John Slattery. So I reached out, and he's been gracious enough to join us. So welcome, John.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, so I just kind of wanted the audience to get to know you a little bit. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about, you're originally from Chicago, right?
Yeah, that is where I was born and where I grew up. I've been in the Tucson area now for about 15 years and out west for close to 20 years. But, I consider the Sonoran Desert my home. I think I know the Sonoran Desert. I feel I know the Sonoran Desert better than any other place that I've ever been. And that's been largely connected to my work and what I do, learning about the plants from this area, particularly the wild plants, and sharing that information and those experiences with people.
Just talking to you the few minutes that I have, it seems to be a real passion, and it's kind of your life's mission, right, to learn about the desert. Just tell us a little bit about how that developed.
Well, it certainly was a natural progression and a sequence of events that would take me a long time to go into much detail, but I will say that after several years of traveling, including a year throughout Latin America, in which I left all my belongings behind, gave away even my vehicle to a friend, had a backpack and walked over the border in Nogales, Arizona, headed towards South America, not intending actually to come back. I had a number of experiences along that route that helped reflect back to me the importance of what has become now my life's work. At that time seemed an interest, but was still yet vague in my mind and in my heart, and I wasn't quite clear on what shape it would take, let alone what lay ahead of me, of course, but it certainly has become my life's work. And at some point along that journey, I was called to come back to Tucson, and I followed that call and pretty much been here since and dedicating myself to the plants. And as a consequence of that process, developed an herbal product company back in 2005.
And that's the Desert Tortoise Botanicals, right?
Desert Tortoise Botanicals, which is, you know, essentially an aspect of my creation in relationship with the local plant, wild plant. And then out from that spawned a variety of educational offerings, including my Sonoran Herbalist Apprenticeship Program, where I take people out on a regular basis to share these experiences and the information and knowledge that I have about local plants through a variety of principles and experiences.
Well, I've got this book in my hand, The Southwest Foraging, and it's over 300 pages. It's just a beautiful book, good size, lots of wonderful pictures and instruction, and just really, really interesting. Let's talk about maybe several of the plants that our listeners would find maybe in their own yards even.
Yeah, so Southwest Foraging, the work encompasses a wide range from Texas to Arizona to Oklahoma, southern Utah, southern Nevada. But because of my living in the Sonoran Desert for so long, you know, plants that I focus on in the book are predominantly Sonoran Desert plants. And even in the book, there's way more edible plants in the Sonoran Desert even than what's in that book. But I certainly did focus on the most popular, most common, most readily available plants. And that's an important place to start for anyone who has an interest in foraging, or even if you don't know what that term means and you know that there's stuff out there that you can eat. I always encourage people to start in their own backyard. Most people don't realize that they have things that are edible in their yard, or if they do, they may often overlook them, whether they're annual plants, also known as weeds, or perennial shrubs, cactus, trees even. So this time of year, what's really significant in the Sonoran Desert, and especially this year, because there's a unusually high production of fruit this year on the prickly pear cactus.
My favorite.
And yeah, it's an emblematic plant of the Sonoran Desert and many other deserts. In fact, most people don't realize there are prickly pear cacti in every single 48 U.S. contiguous state.
Oh, native. I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, not always easy to find by any means, but we're certainly in the heartland in southern Arizona. So it's an abundant resource, easy to identify, but the problem that a lot of people consider with this is that it has thorns, and then the real tiny, spiny parts that are called glochids, they're like a modified leaf hair, and they have a hook on the end of them so that once they get in, they can be difficult to get out.
They are wicked.
So that's daunting for a lot of people. However, there are some very simple methods. In fact, I just taught a class last Saturday with a group of people. We went out talked about prickly pear extensively, looked at it closely, tasted a bunch of fruit, picked some, and then brought it back to my office where it processed it for juice. And, you know, a few people did get a couple stickers and glockets, and, you know, it, with some practice, you can go through that whole process and not touch a single fruit and not get a single thorn or glock in you. So for me, I have two basic methods that I like, although there's numerous ways you can do this, and the vast majority of what's out there on the internet or in books is way more than necessary. So two basic methods. One, I say if you have between 1 to 2 gallons of fruit and you have freezer space, I call it the freeze and thaw method. And with that method, you can put fruit in the freezer, say in a pasta strainer, take it out once frozen, put it on top of a bucket, set it out in the heat and the sun to thaw. And before you do anything to it, about two-thirds of it will just juice itself. And then you can press on it with a potato masher to get the remainder. And that's pretty much it. You pour it through a strainer to make sure you get all the seeds and so forth out of the juice, depending on what type of strainer you might be using. The other method, in case you have, you know, say, 2 or more gallons, and you could even, with a couple people, easily do 10 gallons in a day with a simple blend and strain.
Even if you just
have a basic kitchen blender, doesn't have to be anything fancy, you can still do it. You blend it, don't worry about burning, scraping, peeling, anything with the fruit. Tongs off the cactus right into the blender, and then pour it through a strainer. I like to do 2 strainers. Usually you get 95 to 100% of everything you want out of it on the first strain, but second strain will make sure you get everything, and then you've got juice to do whatever you want with.
And it's pretty good for you, the prickly pear, yes?
Yeah, I could go on for a long time about the medicinal qualities of prickly pear, and I'll say two basic things on it. Is that one, for me, it's the most important anti-inflammatory for musculoskeletal. I have countless people that I've worked with that relieve arthritic pain, relieve stiff and sore joints, or some joint pain as a result of an injury. Sometimes just single 1 ounce dose of the juice will alleviate the pain for an extended period of time. So it's quite phenomenal in that way. And then also probably the most significant disease process we have going on in the American public right now is metabolic syndrome or insulin resistance, which basically is at the root of type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and a lot of cancers. Prickly pear can help modify that metabolic imbalance, if you will, in a variety of ways. Prickly pear are really, really exceptional food and medicine. I call it the emblematic food and medicine of our Sonoran Desert because it bridges those gaps really, really exceptionally well. And you can eat it on a daily basis without ever thinking about the medicine, yet you could use it as medicine in a variety of acute scenarios or chronic conditions.
So let's talk about maybe one or two other plants that are common.
This time of year, there's mesquite. So there's a lot of details with mesquite, and probably one of the most significant ones that everyone can relate to, if they simply grab a bean from their tree and taste it, what does it taste like? So we have both native and non-native mesquites that are commonly found around urban areas in the Southwest, and the non-native ones come from further south in the Americas, somewhere in South America, Bolivia, Peru, perhaps Chile, and those crossbreed with each other quite readily, the native, non-native, and the natives amongst themselves. So not all beans are created equal, even amongst native and non-native. So you really can't say, well, this type tastes like this and that type tastes like that. You really don't know until you tasted what you found.
Even with the same tree, you don't know from year to year. You really do have to taste them. Huh?
That's true. There are even weather conditions, so some rainfall and sun and so forth, that can influence that as well. But once you have, you should be able to rely more or less on a flavor from a particular tree. And that's why it's good, once you find one that you like, to mark it or know where it's at. It's great if it's in your yard, even, you know, try to plant some of those seeds if you like, and go back to it year after year and choose to gather from that one. Mesquite, you pick the pods off the tree once they're rattling dry, and then store them until you can get to a commercial grinder, such as the hammer mill grinder events that happen all over the Southwest now, or you can try processing them in some sort of high-speed grinder in your kitchen. But a traditional way that circumvented that step was just to put them in water in a pot and cook them. So you'd basically make them a mesquite tea. And that could be cooked, you know, to the point of making it more like syrup, and then you have a variety of options to go from there.
What would you do with that tea? Is it just to drink, or you would make it into other things?
Yeah, it could be a drink. It could be a drink. It could be a base for some other say you're going to make pancakes or bread or muffins, you can use that tea as as your liquid base, for example.
Okay.
Even in a soup, if you're going to make, say, a squash soup that you might otherwise add apple juice to it, That's another possibility, smoothie type thing. One of the interesting things about meat is that it does not need to be cooked to be eaten. And in fact, we're not really eating the beans because they're so hard and so small. Usually eating, called the mesocarp, it's the starchy part around the bean, the pod itself. Quite different than, you know, beans that you grow in your garden, other than green beans. But, you know, let's say, you know, a pinto bean or something, we're eating the bean and not the pod. But mesquite has also a complex array of amino acids, all eight essential amino acids. So it's a protein-rich source, as well as being low in simple starches and high in insoluble fiber. So all things that are readily missing in the standard American diet. So it's of exceptional value nutritionally and for individual health, but also tastes great.
It really does. It's everything that we've talked about has very unique flavors, things that maybe acquire a little bit of taste, but I have found that I look forward to it every year. John, I want to thank you for joining us this morning. Why don't you tell people, if they want to learn more, maybe attend your class or find you at a farmer's market, where are they going to go to find you?
Probably the simplest outlet to find information about me now is my new website. It's johnjslattery.com. And on there, they can find my book, Southwest Foraging. They can also go to the upcoming events page. In fact, I'll be in a variety of places in Arizona the next week doing book signings from Tucson to Glendale up to Flagstaff, and an acorn workshop in Flagstaff, second of the month of October. So hopefully they can find me at one of those events.
What an interesting guy.
I love it.
Could just learn a ton from sitting with him, and he'll take you out in the desert and teach you about the plants. The book itself is arranged really nicely. It has all kinds of different ways it's organized. There's charts where you can find plants by terrain, you know, because it's not just Arizona. But you can quickly find the ones that are just in Arizona. And also, he'll tell you what you can harvest by season. So just great. JohnJSlattery.com if you're still interested. If you're in the Phoenix area, you can go to Extension office. I took a mesquite bean class down there last year. It was about 30 people that showed up on a work night. It was just, I think there's a growing interest in using edible desert plants.
I want to find out from John this story about mesquite beans that have dropped on the ground after the rain.
He wouldn't go there. He wouldn't go there with me. I wanted to know.
Because we missed the whole crop this year.
We did.
Just got one poorly timed monsoon rain.
And it ruins the whole season.
And it ruined the whole crop.
So I don't know. He said that's still panning out. We'll see over time. But if you're not hard, well, and there's also a few cautions written in the book. So if you're out in the desert, of course, you have to use your brain and know a little bit about desert survival. Watch for snakes and critters and things like that.
It's a snake-rich environment. And it seems like I've seen more snakes the last 2 years than I've seen in the last 15.
Mm-hmm. So just take a little stick and beat around before you get up close. And be really careful with your little kids if you're going. They can stay in the back of the pickup truck. Those little stickers on those prickly pears, they're so bad they just jump out at you.
So there you go. Wining and dining on the desert floor. John Slattery, Southwest Foraging. Great, great little resource book. That'd be a good little book just to have in your truck all the time.
Yeah, a little survival guide. If you get stuck out in the desert, you'd be able to find things to eat.
All right, when we get back, I want to talk to y'all a little bit about some staycation news that we've got. Stay tuned.